All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves tonight in the 12th bracha. Birkas Haminim. So if we look at number one, so first of all, our series is sponsored by Richard Simon in memory of his grandmother, Elka Frida Bas Chana LeHashalom. We hope that the merits of our Talmud Torah, her Neshama, will have an aliyah, as well as by the Toso family in memory of Karen's father, Elio Gershon Ben Faiva LaKoin. We hope that in the merits of our Talmud Torah, his Neshama will have an aliyah. So begin with number one. V'lamashinim al tihi sikva. Literally, for the slanderers, let there be no hope. V'chol harisha kirega toved. And all the wickedness shall perish, and may all wickedness perish in an instant. V'chol evecha mehera yikaresu. And may all your people's enemies be swiftly cut down. V'hasedim mehera sa'aker useshaber usemager. May you swiftly uproot, crush, cast down, and humble the arrogant swiftly in our days. V'sachnia b'mehera b'yameinu. Baruch atah Hashem, shover oivim u'machnia zedim. Blessed are you, Lord, who destroys enemies and humbles the arrogant. The 12th bracha of Shmona Esrei. Of course, what's unique about this bracha, what jumps out immediately is what? I'm sorry? Okay, good. We'll get to that originally. Correct? Good. It wasn't originally there, although you wouldn't know that from the bracha, right? But again, what's interesting textually about the bracha, or thematically about the bracha, is first of all, it has the Vila Malshinim, excellent, the Vav, what we call the Vav Amosif, which seems like it's connected to something prior. Good. What else? Thematically, what's interesting about it? It's very negative. It's very negative, meaning if you look at all of the brachos until this point, the brachos really have been phrased in the positive. We are asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things. We are beseeching HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things. We're asking God ultimately to go ahead and provide for us. And yet, interestingly enough, in this bracha, we are actually asking God to do something, what appears to be destructive. We're asking God to do something punitive. We're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to help, but rather, again, to destroy. Of course, again, yes, it's to help as well. Just it's help in a different form. Whereas the other brachos refer to help in a positive fashion, here we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us, ultimately by removing this type of negative influence. But the obvious question is, so when you see a bracha that stands in such contradistinction to all of the other blessings in Shmona Esrei, so there must be something to it. So let's spend a few moments speaking about the origins and beginning of this bracha. Number two, the Gemara Maseches Bracha says the following, Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Shimon HaPakuli, his dear Shmona Esrei Bracha Sifnei Rabbi Gamliel ala Seder B'Yavne. Shimon HaPakuli established 18 brachos before Rabbi Gamliel in the proper order in Yavne. Now, remember, we've spoken about this before, that we saw that there are two different versions as to when Shmona Esrei was instituted. Shimon HaPakuli lives during First Temple era, and yet the Rambam and the Gemara also makes allusion to this, that Shmona Esrei was instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the men of the Great Assembly, who were most active right after the destruction of the First Temple into the Second Temple era. So there are a number of different ways to resolve this. Most notably, according to most opinions, Shmona Esrei was originally instituted by Shimon HaPakuli, and then as a result of the trauma of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it was forgotten, and the men of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, reinstituted it afterwards. Amar lahem Rabbi Gamliel l'chachamim. Rabbi Gamliel said to the sages, Klum yesh adam sheyodea litakin berkas haminim. Is there a man among us who knows how to create or how to craft a bracha that asks for the removal and the destruction of the heretics? Okay. Amad Shmuel HaKatan Vitakna. Shmuel, that is a very interesting appellation as well. Shmuel HaKatan, literally Shmuel the little one, got up and he made it. He created, he forged the bracha. So the Gemara tells a story. L'shana acheres shachacha. So remember, you know, in the days before the printing press, so people had to daven by heart. They had to do a lot of things by handwritten manuscript. You know, today we take it for granted. You go into a Jewish home and you find all these different siddurim. So understand, siddurim once upon a time were a novelty. So when somebody used to lead the tzibur achazin, they would daven about that. So the Gemara tells a story that Shmuel HaKatan, excuse me, is leading the services. And he gets to the bracha of Lavalam Hashinim, the bracha that he himself instituted, and he can't remember it. He freezes. He can't remember it. V'hishkef pashtayim v'shalosh shos. And literally, he's standing there for 2 or 3 hours. Now, the amazing part is not that he stood there for 2 or 3 hours. The amazing part is that people stayed in shul. Right? That's the amazing part. So people waited there. He's literally, hishkip, I mean, he's trying to remember for 2 or 3 hours. Now, the Gemara says, and they did not remove him from his position of chazan. So the Gemara says, amai lo ha'alu, why did they not remove him? After all, v'ham rav yudam rav, ta'a b'chol ha'brochos kulan ein ma'alin oso, b'birkas haminim ma'alin oso, chayshinan shemaminu. The halacha is that if a chazan makes a mistake in any of the brachos of Shemona Esrei, we don't remove him because of that mistake. We don't remove him because of that mistake. However, if he makes a mistake in the bracha of Olam HaShinim, if he makes a mistake in the bracha about destroying heretics, we do remove him. We take him immediately away from being the chazan. Why? Because we're concerned that maybe he's a closet heretic. Maybe, again, he's really a heretic at heart, and therefore when he gets up to this bracha, he doesn't want to say the words that would call for his own destruction, and therefore he kind of throws the bracha. He makes a mistake intentionally. So why didn't we remove Shmuel HaKatan? Why didn't they remove him then from the Chazan's lectern if he made a mistake by Valam HaShinim, to which the Gemara answers, Shiny Shmuel HaKatan, Dio Tikna. Listen, Shmuel HaKatan is the one who made the bracha. Right, he created the bracha, so to think that he's a closet heretic, of course, would not make sense. So the Gemara tells us something very interesting. The one, as Emily mentioned before, that clearly this bracha, this 12th bracha of Shemona Esrei, which ultimately becomes the 19th bracha of Shemona Esrei, but it's here in the middle, this 12th bracha of Shemona Esrei was an add-on bracha. It was not part of the original 18. That's why the Gemara says the original 18 were instituted by Shimon HaPakuli, Anshe Knesset HaGedola. Rabbi Gamliel feels there's a need for this additional bracha, puts out the call. Who is going to institute this bracha? Shmuel HaKatan answers it. The obvious question is, why did Rabbi Gamliel feel that there was a need for this additional bracha? Look at number 3. The Rambam writes the following. The Rambam writes, Bimei Rabbi Gamliel, Rabu Ha'apikursin B'Yisrael. In the days of Rabbi Gamliel, there was a proliferation of heretics. V'hayu mitzirim liYisrael, and they made things very difficult for the Jewish people. Umasisin osan lashuv me'achari Hashem, and tried to entice the people to go ahead and to remove themselves from God. V'chevon sheru shezu gidula mikol tzarche b'nei Adam, and when Rabbi Gamliel saw that the need to deal with the heretics was as acute as all of the other needs that we ask for in Shemona Esrei, Amot hu ubeis dino v'hiskin bracha achos. He and his beis din got up, they instituted a bracha, shetehe ba she'ilam lefnei Hashem la'abid happy karsin, v'kava osa betila, kedei shetiyya arucha b'fiakol. Rabbi Gamliel sees as the happy karsin is a proliferation of heretics, there's a proliferation of Jews. This bracha is not about Gentiles. This bracha is about Jews. Those Jews who are heretics, who try to poison us from within, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please actively deal with them. Says the Rambam, there's a proliferation of these type of people. During the days of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel therefore goes ahead and asks that an additional bracha be established. Nimtzu kol ha'brachos shebetfila tisha esrei brachos. Therefore, it comes out that there are a total of 19 brachos in Shemona Esrei. If you look at number 4, Rabbi Lau, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, we'll see why this ties into Pirkei Avos in just a little bit, discusses this in a little bit greater context. La'achar shesodru osan Shemona Esrei. This is number 4, paragraph A. Ra'a Rabbi Gamliel shehayenasi yisra b'tekufas hasanhedrin b'yavne. Ki chaseira his yachsus betvila kineget hakofrin shesrabu ba'oseis. But so understand something. Let's get a little bit of a chronology or of a timeline here. So Rabbi Gamliel, remember there are two Rabbi Gamliels. There's Rabbi Gamliel during the first temple era, and there's Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne was obviously post-destruction of First Temple. He was actually a great-grandson of the previous Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel 1, Rabbi Gamliel 2. The Rabbi Gamliel that we're referring to over here, number 2, is Rabbi Gamliel 2. So this is Rabbi Gamliel in Yavne. Remember, the second base of Mikdash has been destroyed. The Jewish center of Jewish life has been relocated from Yerushalayim to Yavne. What's happening during this time? Just to give you an idea, in the days of Rabbi Gamliel, it's the beginning of Hadrianic persecution. It's the beginning. Ultimately, the Roman government is strong. There's virtually no Jewish autonomy. This is still a couple of years before the Bar Kokhba rebellion, but very little Jewish autonomy. And there are massive numbers of Jews that are trying to ingratiate themselves to the Romans. How do you ingratiate yourself to the Romans? By essentially turning your back on your fellow Jews. And not only that, but by trying to bring as many Jews with you as you can. So that's what's unfolding right over here. This is the first generation after the destruction of the Second Temple. So therefore, says Rabbi Lau, Rabbi Gamliel saw Shainosi Yishob et Kufas HaSanhedrim Yavne, ki chaseiro hisyachsus betfila keneged hakofrim sheshtrabo ba'oseis. Rabbi Gamliel realized they had to add into prayer some type of petition for God to take care of the negative elements within our own midst. B'dolos ha'achorn l'bayis ha'sheni, u'b'yasr se'is b'tekufa shel achar ha'charban. Remember, in the generation after the destruction of the Second Temple, tzatzu u'parchu kitos shonos u'mishonos b'am Yisrael. There are many groups that spring up within the Jewish people. So who sprung up? Tzedukim, Baitusim. There are people who deny the authenticity of the oral tradition. Isiim, the Essenes, Notzrim, the Christians. Remember again, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed in the year 60. In the year 60, which is right around the same time in which again Christianity, when we say Christianity begins to get its roots, it's not necessarily Christianity per se as we know it today. But the point is that Jesus and his disciples ultimately again are coming into their own. Now remember, it's just important to know, at this point in time, Christians are being persecuted as well. Christians are being, remember, the Romans hated the Christians also. So Rome was persecuting Jews, Rome was persecuting Christians, Rome was persecuting everyone, except the Romans. So the point that I'm allowed, and remember again, who were the original founders of Christianity? The Jews. So remember, so what Rabbi Lau is pointing out over here is, you have Jews going ahead and joining all of these other sects. So the Baitusim and the Tzedukim and the Essenes and the Christians and all this stuff is happening right in front of Rabbi Gamliel's eyes. So it's amazing. It's a very profound idea, because what Rabbi Lau is pointing out is at this point in time in history, the greatest existential threat to the Jewish people was not the Romans. Who was it? It was us. It was us. We were undermining ourselves from within. Rabbi Gamliel therefore says we need a bracha. Now you see, a bracha does two things. A bracha, of course, is a request of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a petition. It's saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please help me with this. But a bracha also does is it sensitizes the masses to certain dynamics. So by creating and codifying this bracha, what Rabbi Gamliel is ultimately doing is he's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for assistance with this negative dynamic. And in addition to that, he's going ahead and what? He's sensitizing people to what is unfolding within their midst. And he goes on. He says, HaChashash HaGodol HaZeh SheBemeshech HaZman YiTashtashu HaGvulos Bein Mutar LaAsar Bein Tamei LaTar. What's going to happen? Well, what happens when new sects spring up within Judaism? The lines between right and wrong are blurred. The lines between kosher, treif, tamei, tahar, light, dark, everything begins to become blurred. Kimokein, hishtrabu mekrei ha'alshona va'begida va'misron. Not only that, remember, there were many Jews who felt that the way to go ahead and ingratiate themselves to Rome, bless you, was to literally work against the Jewish cause, was to work against the Jews. Osama apikarsim, uva'ap osama akarsim, ozve hadas, heitzor rabboslam. These apikarsim, those who left religion, caused many problems for the people. Hadavui belav hachi min astam lo chasru gam choshe ofi, shirotu lahachnif limzov. Look at paragraph base, excuse me, B. Misibos ela, Ratzav Rabbi Gamliel lahachnis l'seder ha'tfila, bakasha miyuchades li'ibud osa mashin muminim. Therefore, Rabbi Gamliel, as a way of addressing this new internal threat, felt that we have to introduce a new bracha. Mataras ha'tfila hi, what's the purpose of this bracha? Levatei es ha'chumra shebitofas ha'mashinus. To show people the incredible negativity that is associated ultimately with slander and heretical behavior. Ulechadit es sakona sakfira betoras Moshe ubemesores sha'uvra ba'peh. Paragraph C. Alkein la'achar shesod yoshmona esrei bracha armolar Rabbi Gamliel chachamim Klum yesh adam sheyodeh l'takin birkas hatzadukim. So what happens? Therefore, immediately after Shmoneh Esrei is already established, now this new threat arises. Rabbi Gamliel feels the need to institute a new bracha. Look at number five. So let's analyze this a little bit. So now remember, so now we understand historically what's happening. Second Beis Hamikdash has been destroyed. Number of sects are spinning off from Judaism. Those sects ultimately, again, are harming the Jewish people, are ultimately blurring the lines between right and wrong, between Tameh and Tahar. Rabbi Gamliel feels the need to make an active declaration against these other groups. He puts out a call. Who could write the bracha? Shmuel HaKatan answers. So let's speak a little bit about who is this Shmuel HaKatan. So the Gemara number 5 is from the Yerushalmi Sota, writes, the Lama Nikra Shmo Katan. Why was he called Shmuel HaKatan? So the Gemara says, Lefi Shehu Maktin Atzmo. Because Shmuel HaKatan was exceptionally humble. And he never stood on ceremony. He never stood on ceremony. He always lessened. Maktin Atzmo literally means he always lessened himself. He never put himself on a pedestal. So in number 6, Rabbi Lau quotes over here a beautiful Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara, we'll just read the first part, then I'll tell you the rest outside. The Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin writes, Muva Uvda, Hamamchish Alano Eskodo An Busunoso Shel Shmuel. The Gemara tells us a story which highlights the incredible humility of Shmuel. Ma Sep Rabbi Gamliel Sha'amar Hashkimu Li Shiva La'aliyah. There was one Sep Rabbi Gamliel co-invited 7 elders to his attic. Now, why is he inviting 7 elders to his attic? So Rabbi Lau goes on, Nasi Yisrael Bikesh, Ki Lemachar Baboker Ya'alu Elav Shiva Migdol Yisrael, Al Menas Lahaskim Yachtov Al Tzorach La'aber Sashana. So this is actually very halacha l'maisa, right? We find ourselves in Adar Aleph. Remember, there is a concept in the Jewish calendar of a leap year. When remember, this has to do with the fact that the Jewish calendar is a solar calendar. Excuse me, is a lunar calendar. But remember, our Yamim Tovim are based on the seasons, which are governed ultimately by the solar calendar. So sometimes the two calendars are off. Now, where does this make a big difference? By Pesach. Because Pesach is called Chag HaAviv. Pesach is called the Yom Tov of the spring. So imagine for a moment, if we would not go ahead and have an Adar Sheni this year, Pesach would be much earlier, potentially still within the winter season. So the Gemara tells us, Rabbi Gamliel, now obviously our calendar is fixed. Hillel HaSheni fixed our calendar, but before that, Beis Din used to determine year by year whether or not a leap year was necessary. Now, not anyone could go ahead and do a leap year, right? You'd have to go ahead and gather the 7 greatest sages. So the Gemara tells a story that Rabbi Gamliel made a call to gather the greatest 7 sages to come up to his attic, and they're going to decide together to make a leap year. So the Gemara discusses, L'macharas hishkimu matzah shmona. What happens? Next day, everybody assembles Rabbi Gamliel's attic, and what happens? There are 8 people there. There are 8 great people there. So Rabbi Gamliel says, Amar mihu sha'ala shelo birshus. Whoever came up here without permission, yeyreid, has to go down. What happened? So the Gemara says, Amar paragraph B, Amar Shmuel HaKatan va'amar, anihu sha'alisi shelo birshus. Shmuel HaKatan got up and he said, it's me. I'm the stowaway, right? I'm the guy who is here without permission. He says, Ani mode va'ashma, anihu achacham shelo huzman. I am the chacham who was not invited. Ulam velo la'aber sashana lisis. He explains, I didn't come here to really be part of the intercalation of the year, but rather I'm here to learn the process. The Gemara goes on and explains that at the end of the day, if you look at paragraph D, Mosifa ha-Gemara v'omeres, velo Shmuel ha-Katan haya, ele ina shachrina. It wasn't true. One of the other guys there shouldn't have been there. Shmuel HaKatan was supposed to be there. So why did he stand up and identify himself as the extra rabbi present in order not to embarrass the other? Now, obviously, standing up and saying that he was the rabbinic stowaway obviously is embarrassing for him. But you see over here that's what? That he was willing to take on that embarrassment, that shame, in order to spare someone else from having to endure it. Interesting enough, Rabbi Gamliel says to him, stay. He says, shev b'ni shev. Rabbi Gamliel was so impressed with the character because he realized Shmuel HaKatan was supposed to be there. He was so impressed with his character that he tells him to stay. So paragraph E, umachmas kisufa of it, the Gemara says, because Shmuel HaKatan did not want to embarrass another, ultimately he identified himself as the extra man. So therefore, the Gemara suggests that it was because of this type of self-effacing behavior, this type of humble behavior, that he earned the title of Hakatan. Shmuel Hakatan. Shmuel, because he always made himself so small in the eyes of others. Number seven, the Gemara gives another possibility. The Gemara writes, V'yeshomrim, lefi shema'at haya katan mishmuel haramasi. This is beautiful. Another possibility, says the Gemara, is that Shmuel, was almost as great as the prophet Samuel, as Shmuel Hanavi. So they called him Shmuel HaKatan. Why? Because he was only just a little bit less great than the prophet Shmuel. Right? So Shmuel HaKatan was just a little bit less great than the prophet Shmuel. Kishanes, when he died, Hayu Omer Malav, they said about Shmuel HaKatan, Hay, Have Anav, Chassid, Tamidu Shal Zakin. He was humble, he was pious, he was a student of Hillel. Take a look at number 8, says Rabbi Lau again. Hatana Shmuel, Hisnase L'madrega Rama Kol Kach, Ad Shegodol Mirabban Shmuel. Rabbi Lau makes a very interesting observation. Rabbi Lau writes that in this era already of Tanoim, which is the name of this group of rabbis in the post-Second Temple era, remember, they already have the title Rav, or Rabban. For example, we have Rabban Gamliel. We have other... But amazingly enough, Shmuel doesn't have a title, right? He's not called Rav Shmuel. I mean, there is a Rav Shmuel also. He's just called Shmuel. Shmuel HaKatan. Rabbi Lau writes that there's a concept that there were some people who were so great that they defied titles. They defied titles. If you think about it, like Moshe, right? Moshe. You know, he's not like Rabbi Moshe. He's not Harav, Hagon, Tzadik, Moshe. He's Moshe. Okay, maybe we add in a Rabbeinu there. Right, but amazingly enough, Aaron, Avraham, Yitzchak, there are some people that are just so great that any title would not do them justice. Says Rabbi Lau, Shmuel was one of those people. Remember, everyone else in this generation does have the appellation Rav, Rabban, Rabbeinu. Amazingly enough, not Shmuel. Godel, he uses this idea, Godel mi Rabban Shmo. Their name was greater than any title rabbi. Hulo kuna rebi kishar tanoim ad rabba huzoke litoar katan hakatan o sheneda ki ma'alasui ach bema'at pachos mi ma'alas Shmuel Hanavi. The only other additional title that he's known by is as hakatan, the small one, and the small one's not a reference to his stature. The small one is a reference to the fact that he was only a little bit less greater than the biblical Samuel, than the biblical Shmuel. Paragraph B. Lo yipole efo. He tells an amazing story over here. That one time the rabbis were sitting in an aliyah, in an attic in Yavna, and a heavenly voice came out and said, Yesh kan echod sharaui shetishra alav shechina. There is one person among you who is fit for the shechina to devolve upon him. Elo she'im doro zakai lekach. Meaning what the Baskel was saying was, there is a man among you who is fit for prophecy, but the generation is not deserving of having a prophet. And the Gemara says, Nasnu chachamim eseinehem b'Shmuel HaKatan. At that moment, all the other rabbis directed their glance at Shmuel HaKatan. They knew that the Baskel, they knew that the heavenly voice was not referring to any of them, but rather ultimately was referring to Shmuel HaKatan. So here the Gemara gives two different ideas as to why it's called Shmuel HaKatan. Either A, because he was so self-effacing, or B, because he was only just a little bit less in greatness than the biblical Shmuel. Take a look at number 9. So here, this is actually a very beautiful Gemara from Maseches Smachos. So the Gemara writes the following. The Gemara writes, Ukishames Shmuel HaKatan. When Shmuel HaKatan died, talu lo maftecha upinkaso ba'arono mipnei shelo hayo lo bein. This is quite amazing. They put, maftecha means his keys, pinkaso is his writing tablet. They placed it on his casket. Why? Because he did not leave behind a son. Now, I don't know if this means that Shmuel HaKatan didn't have children, or he just didn't have a son. But the point is, the keys and the writing tablets represent passing of the baton, so to speak, from father to son. He did not leave an heir, so they placed his items on his casket. And Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar eulogized him. They said, "Va'amru alzeh no elifkos." For the loss of a man like this, that's a reason to cry. And for a man like this, one should mourn. When kings die, we give their crowns to their children, to their sons. Ashire mesim, when rich people die, manichim oshol name, we give ultimately their wealth to their sons. Shmuel hakatan nato eskol chamudo sha'olam vahalachlo. Shmuel hakatan took all of the riches of this world, vahalachlo, and he took them with him, meaning he had no one ultimately to leave them to. So Shmuel hakatan does not apparently leave a son in which to go ahead and give over his Yerusha, the inheritance. Now we know a little bit. So here's what we know so far. We know what's happening at this point in time historically. There is an incredible, incredible surge of these anti-Jewish sects. Again, they're Jews themselves, but they are undermining ultimately the foundation of Torah, true Judaism. Rabbi Gamliel feels the need to react to this by instituting another bracha in Shmona Esrei that calls for the destruction of these groups and their theology. He puts out a call. Shmuel HaKatan answers it. Who is Shmuel HaKatan? Exceptionally self-effacing, exceptionally humble, a man who was fit for prophecy, but his generation did not deserve it, a man who was almost as great as Shmuel HaNavi, which then leads us to the basic question of why was it Shmuel HaKatan who instituted this bracha? Right? Meaning, obviously, Rabbi Gamliel puts out the call. Rabbi Gamliel doesn't say, Shmuel HaKatan, I want you to do it. Rabbi Gamliel puts out the call, and Shmuel HaKatan answers it. Why, out of all the available rabbis, why was it Shmuel HaKatan who wrote this bracha? So to answer this question, we have to look at a Mishnah in Avos. Take a look at number 10. The Mishnah Maseches Avos writes, Shmuel HaKatan Omer, Shmuel HaKatan says, he quotes the pasuk from Mishlei, Bin fal ayvecha al tismach. When your enemy falls, or if your enemy falls, do not rejoice. Ubikishlo al yagel libecha. And if he stumbles, let not your heart be glad. Pen yira Hashem, lest God see it, v'ra be'inov, and be displeased, v'heshif me'alav apo, and divert his wrath from him to you. So first of all, what's interesting about this in general is Pirkei Avos is all about moral and ethical lessons. What did Shmuel HaNavi do in this Mishnah? What did Shmuel HaKatan do in this Mishnah? All he did is he quoted a pasuk from Mishlei, which is interesting. Meaning the Mishnah actually doesn't contain any new information. Shmuel HaKatan quoted a pasuk, and that's the pasuk here. So the commentators in the Mishnah understand that what this means is, this is something that Shmuel HaKatan used to say all of the time. He used to always say, Bin fal ayvecha al tismach. When your enemy falls, do not rejoice. This, and therefore this became known as his saying, even though it's Solomonic in origin. So what does this mean? Now, I want to be clear. What type of enemy is Shmuel HaKatan referring to? I'm sorry? So he's actually not referring to non-Jews, interestingly enough. This actually goes out with Shlomo HaMelech, because the truth is, not our topic for tonight, there are contradictory psukim that indicate that when your enemies do fall, you are permitted to rejoice. Now, this was an interesting discussion. I spoke about this on Shabbos when Osama bin Laden was killed. You know, so there's a whole discussion from a Judaic perspective. Should we rejoice or not? Should we rejoice or not? After all, again, an incredible, incredible evil man has been removed from the world. At the same time, what do you do with Shlomo HaMelech's bin fel evecha al tismach? So the simple answer is Shlomo HaMelech is not referring to Osama bin Laden's of the world. Shlomo HaMelech is referring to Jewish enemies. Truth is, we have Jewish enemies. We have internal enemies. And Shlomo HaMelech is saying, ultimately, when your Jewish enemy falls, do not rejoice. When your Gentile oppressor falls, maybe there is incredible room for rejoicing. After all, we have whole Yom Tovim about that, right? We celebrate Purim, ultimately, again, because Haman was defeated. We celebrate Hanukkah, because ultimately we overcame the Greeks. We celebrate Pesach, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and took us out of the time and literally decimated the Egyptians. So we see that we do celebrate when those who oppress us ultimately fall. Bin fal ayvecha al tismach means when the Jew who you contend with, when your Jewish enemy falls, do not rejoice. And the question is, why not? Why not? Look, there are bad people. There are bad people out there. So if a bad person, especially somebody who did something bad to me, that person gets what's coming to him, what's coming to her, why shouldn't I rejoice? Why shouldn't I rejoice in the system of divine justice that has been delivered? So look at number 11. This is an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says, the Gemara says, Hanoi Baryoni, Tahava Bishvevus Rabbi Meir. Now there were these Baryoni. Baryoni means like ruffians. Ruffians, no goodniks. So there were these ruffians, these bad people who lived in the neighborhood of Rabbi Meir. Vahava Kamitsaru Le Tuva. And they gave Rabbi Meir a terrible time. They were constantly bothering Rabbi Meir, and they were constantly making his life exceptionally difficult. So what did he do? What did he want to do? Hava kabay Rabbi Meir rachami alayu ki hechi dol mesu. Rabbi Meir wanted to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they should die. I'm going to daven to God that God should kill them. Right? They're making my life miserable. I'm a Torah scholar. They're making my life miserable. I'm going to daven that they should die. Amra le Bruria divisu. So Rabbi Meir's wife Bruria was a very wise woman. Said to him, "My daitech." Now, "my daitech" literally means, "What are you thinking?" Right? I think every good wife says this to her husband at some point in time. Right? What are you thinking? What's going through your mind right now? So mishum dechsiv yitamu chatam. So maybe you're thinking like this. The pasuk says yitamu chatam, which means what? Sin will cease to exist. Right? So maybe you're thinking to yourself, you know, these people are sinners. These people are sinners, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu should cause them to cease to exist. So Beruya says, miksiv chotim. Does the pasuk say that the sinner should cease to exist? Chatoim ksiv. The pasuk says sin should cease to exist. Va'od shafir l'sefer tikra. Go to the end of the pasuk. What does the pasuk say? Ureshaim od einam. The wicked will be no more. And the way Bria understood this pasuk was in the following way: Kevan di tamul chatoim. Once sin will stop, ureshaim od einam. Once sin stops, then what will happen? The wicked will be no more. So what Bria was saying to her husband, well, look, Ella, so Bria says, here's my advice to you, my dear husband. Boi rachami iluyi ilayhu delehadru b'tshuva. Don't daven for these bayonim. Don't daven for these bad guys to die, but rather what? Daven that they do tshuva. Daven that they change. What was in there and what? Urishoim odinam. And if you daven that they change, then what's going to happen? They will no longer be wicked. Now, just as an aside, this Gemara presents an incredible theological difficulty, which is not our topic for tonight, which is, you know, the Gemara says that Hakol bidei Hashem chutz meyirat shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except my willingness to fear God. How you could daven for someone else ultimately to do tshuva is a subject of much discussion, not our topic for tonight. The point that Bria was making to her husband was what? People are not bad. People are not bad. People are good. Just what happens is sometimes, or maybe often, good people do bad things. And that colors the nature and quality of their personhood. But if somehow you could just get rid of the ra, if somehow you could just get rid of the chait, the person will revert back to their default state of good. Rabbi Meir is ready to daven for these guys to die because his assumption is they're bad. Bruria says, you're wrong. They're not bad. They're good. And her proof is the pasuk. The pasuk doesn't say, yitamu chotim min ha'aretz urishayim odinam. The pasuk doesn't say, the sinners will disappear and therefore the wicked will be no more. Rather, what does the pasuk say? Yitamu chatoim. Once sin stops, if people would only stop to sin, there would be no more wicked people. So Bruria and her husband have a fundamental dispute in human nature. Rabbi Meir felt that people who do bad things are bad people. Bruria felt that people who do bad things are what? Are what? Are good people who are doing bad things. And therefore, if you can go ahead and somehow reverse the negative behavior, you can salvage the individual. And look how the Gemara ends. But Rabbi Meir was a good husband. He listened to his wife. He davens. Bo'o, rachame ilayu. Rabbi Meir davens for these ruffians, for these baryonim, v'hadru b'tshuva. And amazingly enough, they do tshuva. So what's amazing over here is the following. Perhaps when Shlomo HaMelech says, Binfal Aivecha al Tismach, what was he saying? He's saying, you know, if you've been wronged by someone, and sometimes very severely, and that person suffers a setback, if you rejoice over that person's setback, that person's failure, that person's falling, it means that you look at that person as being bad. you look at that person as being a Rasha, as being Ra, as being a Chote in their essence. Shlomo HaMelech essentially says what Bria was saying to her husband. We believe that as a people, even the most difficult and most rotten among us are only externally rotten. It's not rotten to the core. Every Jew at his or her core is good. Just sometimes the good becomes covered by so many layers, obscured by so many layers of negativity. So Shlomo HaMelech says, you can't rejoice when your Jewish enemy stumbles, because if you do that, what you're ultimately seeing is you feel that that person is negative at their core. Don't rejoice when they stumble. Ultimately, again, the actions are bad, but the person is good. Or in other words, what Shlomo HaMelech was really saying was, hate the sin, not the sinner. Hate the actions, but never, God forbid, despise or hate the individual. That's the same thing what Bria was saying also. Yitamu chatoim. If somehow we're just able to remove the negativity, the sin, urishoim odinam, the wicked will disappear. Not because they're going to die, but because ultimately wickedness will cease to exist and the good default of man will once again be reinstated. Now we begin to understand why Shmuel HaKatan was the one who instituted this bracha. Because remember again, what is Shmuel HaKatan, number one, is the one who ultimately says what? Is one that says, bin falai vecha al tismach. What does that tell you about Shmuel HaKatan's view of people? What's his view of people? People at their core are good. Shmuel HaKatan says, it doesn't matter how badly they behave. I mean, of course it matters, but it doesn't matter how far off the derech they go. It doesn't matter how much they've missed the boat. It doesn't matter how much they turn their back on their fellow Jew. At their core, they're still good. Therefore, if you see them encounter difficulty, do not rejoice. Always believe with all of your heart that at their core, that good is always there. That's why only a Shmuel HaKatan could institute the bracha of Olam HaShinim. Look at number 12. Rabbi Lau addresses this. He writes the following. He writes, Ma'polos ha-rishonim, ki ha-dover ha-achron shalino lach-potzbo. We don't want the downfall of the Jewish wicked. Tchila alino le-hiswal le-chazrasa b'tshuva. You know how we deal with the wicked, the Jewish wicked, that is? You know how we deal with them? First thing we do is we daven for them to see the light. We daven for them to do tshuva. La-ha-karasam ba-ovda ki Hashem hu-alakim. When we see someone who's doing something terribly wrong, we don't daven for them to disappear. We don't daven for them to die. We daven for them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should show them light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should open their eyes to the real realities. Paragraph B. So you have to understand something. So now this begins to take form. So Rabbi Gamliel says like this. We need to make a bracha of Olam HaShinim. What is Olam HaShinim all about? We need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to destroy. Again, we can go back to number one. What are we asking God for? For the slanderers, let there be no hope. May all their wickedness perish in an instant. May all of your people's enemies be swiftly cut down. May you swiftly uproot, crush, cast down, humble the arrogance. This is serious decimation and destruction. So Rabbi Gamliel says, but yet, I need someone who could craft and who could craft this bracha, but do it with love. I need someone who can ask for the destruction of all of the negative theology within our midst that is threatening to undermine the very sanctity of our religious foundation, but not someone who's angry, not someone who's vengeful, not someone who wants to see other Jews suffer and get what's coming to them. I need someone who calls for the destruction of negative theology, but yet what? Still loves those who possess and propagate that very theology. So I need someone who could hate the sin but love the sinner. I need someone who could say in such fiery wording and verbiage that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to destroy all of this theology, this negative theology, in parentheses, but please keep the people intact. But please save the individuals. But don't destroy the individual who may possess these theologies. So this somehow tried to extricate those negative theologies from his or her mind. Rabbi Lau goes on in number 12. Mihu ha'adam shechol atakin tefillah mein zu. Who is the man who has the ability to establish, to write this type of prayer? Havi omer adam shechaf mikol megia ishis. It has to be, first of all, someone who's very humble. Because remember, interestingly enough, if you want to ever grow in your Avas Yisrael, if you ever want to grow in your love for the other, the most important meat, the most important attribute is humility. Because when a person humbles themselves before others, that's when a person is open to seeing the good in everyone else. Arrogance prevents you from seeing anything positive in someone else because a person is totally self-absorbed and self-centered. So who could write this type of bracha? Okay, that I could hate the sin but love the sinner. I could despise the theology but yet still believe that those who possess it are still good at their core. I need a man, ultimately, who's self-effacing, who's humble. A person who does not want to see the destruction of the other. Rak Adam Shinaki Mikol Rivav Yochol Lechaber Bakasha Shakal Kavanas L'Shem Shemayim. Only a man who is humble, self-effacing, truly loves the other, can ask for the destruction of negative theologies. Paragraph C. Zap Shat Hanachon Shal She'ilas Rabbi Gamliel. This is what Rabbi Gamliel was asking. Klum Yesh Adam. Is there anyone who knows how to go ahead and formulate the bracha of the tzedukim? Rabbi Gamliel is not looking for someone who's a master of language. What Rabbi Gamliel is looking for is someone with a pure heart. Asher yihye baru lo etzem u'atzmo u'lekulam. Shirak Tovas Klai Sava Harotsum the Gilei Machu Shamayim, Haim Omdim Lenegadeva. You see, you know what this bracha had to accomplish? This bracha had to accomplish, you know, sometimes we know, it's not just in the Jewish people, some of the worst horrific things that have happened throughout the history of mankind have been perpetrated in the name of God. Because when people feel they're doing something for a higher purpose, they feel they have a license to do all types of unspeakable things. So, Sister Gamliel, here's my conundrum, here's my difficulty. We need to eradicate these theologies, the Essenes and the Tzedukim and the Baitusim and the Jewish Christians, all this stuff. Why? Because it's undermining the very foundation of our religion. But I have to be careful because I don't want someone who's going to come out and curse everyone, who's going to want to destroy. I need someone who loves the sinner but hates the sin. I need someone who believes in the goodness of man at his core, but yet still realizes that these negative theologies must be quickly and decisively dealt with. Paragraph D. Ke'es barur ki ha'ish ha'mat'im mikol le'mesim le'chaber tefila k'neged ha'minim hu Shmuel HaKatan. There was only one man who was fit for the job, and that was Shmuel HaKatan. Ha'ish sheme'olam lo'karnal lo'sonim ishim Shmuel HaKatan, who never had any enemies. Mishum shekdin atzo k'neged kalecha, because he was so self-effacing. Sheshinan kol yamav es ha'masar shal Shlomo HaMelech bin cholei becha'al tismach, who lived his entire life with the Solomonic mantra of do not rejoice when your enemy stumbles. Hu zeh shetzarech lechaber tefila k'neged oyvei am Yisrael u'mechala le'shem shamayim. This is the man ultimately who will institute the tefila against all those enemies of the Jewish people and those who desecrate the name of heaven. Let me just show you one more thing in number 13. And then a Sid bin Ekos from Yonas and Ibishitz, the Yaros Tvash, who writes, Yosum Elibo, what's the essence of this bracha? A person should think to themselves, Sheyihye ne'ekar minus mi Yisrael, v'sheyihye ma'amin nebetor shebichsav, v'shebalpeh emuna b'li dofi, v'lo yihye bekirbam shoresh pore rosh v'la'ana. Rav Yonas and Ibishitz writes in his Yaros Tvash something amazing. He says, what's the entire message of the bracha v'la'ana? What are we asking for? Are we asking God to destroy people? No. We're asking God to destroy flawed theology. We're asking God to uproot from the hearts of those Jews who believe wrongly, to uproot their negative beliefs. We would never ask for the destruction of the individual. We're just asking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow show the individual the light. So what comes out here is really something absolutely amazing. What comes out from this bracha is, what Rabbi Gamliel was really asking was, yes, we are facing a critical threat. We're being undermined from within. We somehow need to react towards all of these subversive sects that are unfolding, that are spinning off of Judaism. We need to do two things. We need to take an active stand against them, number one. We need to sensitize the people that these things are happening. So how do you do it? Rabbi Gamliel says, I love them. I care about them. Even the ones who are so far gone, even the ones who are collaborating with the Roman government, even I still love them because I believe at their core they're good. I need someone who's going to write a bracha that calls upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come down with full vengeance and fury to eradicate the ideology and flawed theology, but will still preserve the individual. And there's only one man who could do it, Shmuel HaKatan. Because Shmuel HaKatan was self-effacing. Shmuel HaKatan was humble. Shmuel HaKatan believed in hating the sin and never the sinner. Shmuel HaKatan believed that at the end of the day, every person is good at their core. Only such a man could codify the Bracha V'Olam HaShir. Because says Rav Lau, it says Rav Yonasan Eibishitz, what he was really asking was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't want you to go ahead and destroy the sinner, like Bruria said. I don't want Yitamu Chotim. I don't want the sinners to be gone. I just want Yitamu Chatoim. I want you to remove the sin. And if you remove the sin, you'll remove the evil from individuals as well, and they will be good. But Amashinim Altihi Sikva, Yeshua HaKotim, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to please remove the thoughts of slander. Please remove the thoughts of wickedness. Please go ahead and take away those motives for all those who turn against us from within. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sure that if you remove the motivations, if you remove the desires, if you remove the flawed ideology and theology, you will see that at our core, we are all good. And the truth is, this resonates with such an incredible contemporary importance as well. One of our greatest challenges has always been, we're a very polarized people. It's part of our, you know, it comes from a good place. We're very passionate people. So we're passionate about what we agree on, and we're even more passionate about what we don't agree on. And unfortunately, we live in a time where people write off those who are not like them. And the truth is, I think that this happens everywhere. I think it happens everywhere. I think that the more religious write off the less religious, and the less religious write off the more religious, and the Orthodox write off the conservative, and the conservative write off the reform. You know how it goes. You know, everyone to the right of you is a radical. That's the way it works. I'm the center. Everybody's always the center. I'm the center. Everyone to the right of me is a radical, and everyone to the left of me is just, you know, too far gone. So what we end up doing is we end up writing off the individual. And that's why you see sometimes the rhetoric that's used in the way that we speak about each other is so ridiculously inappropriate. You know, you see this, unfortunately, a lot in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, that unfolds a lot, but the way we talk about each other, sometimes, yes, there are there major differences within our people? There are. There are major differences. There are major differences within the different streams of Judaism. There are major differences within streams within Orthodoxy itself. And some of those are major differences. And some of them are important differences. And some of them are crucial differences. But what Shmuel HaKatan was telling us was, there was a way to understand that I may argue vociferously with you about our differences, but I accept the fact that at your core, you're good. And you accept the fact that at my core, I'm good. We can argue about all of the details, but Shmuel HaKatan was teaching us the art of mutual respect, the ability to really see the good in another, despite the fact that there are major theological, hashkafic, religious divides. This is not a new thing. This has been this, you know, people have this vision of what it looked like in the past. You know, all you need to do is open up your Navi, and you could see what it looked like in the past. And you know what? It wasn't anything to write home about. We might have had a base. I mean, we're difficult people. We are. We're wonderful, but we're exceptionally difficult. And the truth is, the people who we're most difficult with is with each other. And Shmuel HaKatan teaches us just the incredible, incredible lesson. How do you relate to those who don't believe like you? And the truth is, this is something that's so important. How do you relate to those who don't believe like you? I vehemently disagree with you theologically. I vehemently disagree with you religiously. But I love you, and I see the good that you have within. I hope one day you see the truth, and everybody has their own set of truths, of course. So you want me to see your truth, I want you to see my truth, but that's okay. I hope one day you'll see the truth, whatever it is. But until that day, even if you do things that I don't like, that I don't approve of, that I don't agree with, at the end of the day, I still work on myself to be able to see the good. And amazingly enough, that's what Shmuel HaKatan was trying to accomplish. In this bracha, that sounds so harsh, in this bracha that sounds like calling down divine vengeance upon the slanderers, what Shmuel HaKatan was really teaching us to do was to accept the differences that we have in the other. Yes, to try to do whatever we can to fix those differences, but ultimately to always see the good, accept the good in the other, no matter how vehemently we may disagree. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. Just announcement, this is going to be the last year. Tonight's the last year until the first week in March. So this is going to go on a 3-week. The next 3 weeks is not going to be shir. I'll send out an email that I have all the details, but I think it's the first week in March, which I think is right before Purim, that Emir Tashem will resume. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. A pleasure.